morning. I'll say I appreciate once again the opportunity to come and be with you for these few days. We talk about some things that I consider to be extremely significant in the world in which we live. The scripture teaches in Isaiah 52 and verse 7, how lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace, who brings good news of happiness, who announces salvation and says to Zion, your God reigns. You might recognize this passage as being quoted by the Apostle Paul in Romans, the 10th chapter, and really just indicates the nature of the gospel. We want to tell people about Christ. We want to tell people about the good news of salvation, to penetrate the hearts of the lost. We want people to know of that salvation. We want to be able to say, your God reigns. Christ is King. And yet, as we know, people so often just flatly reject that. And the question is why? Why do people act as they do? Why do people argue as they do? In Scripture, we read about certain men who lived and often demonstrates what they did wrong, what they did right. We might think of the contrast between men like Ahab on the one hand, or Hezekiah on the other, Saul or David. And today we might ask, well, why is there such disparity between the theist, the believer in God, and the atheist, the one who does not believe in God, or between the Christian and the Muslim? The answer really boils down to the concept of a worldview. And the gospel, of course, is more than just a worldview, but acceptance or rejection of the gospel is going to be based on one's worldview foundations. And we're going to be talking about that, defining it, trying to understand better what that means this morning. Worldview is one of those terms gets tossed around, and sometimes people may not know what that means or understand why it's that big of a deal. I was in a discussion once with an atheist who said, I don't understand what worldviews have to do with morality, for example, which just says, I don't understand what a worldview is. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that this has a major impact on how we interact with people, how we understand what they think and what they believe, and we want to understand this idea better. Worldviews are about foundations, and foundations are vital when it comes to living a purposeful and meaningful kind of life. If you'd look over in Matthew, the 7th chapter, to a well-known text here, in Matthew chapter 7, this is not just for kids. I want us to see something that Jesus says here about the nature of foundations. And this particularly, of course, he's not talking specifically about worldviews, but he is talking about foundations, understanding the importance of those foundations in our lives. Verse 24, Matthew 7, therefore everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and slammed against that house, and it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew, and slammed against the house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Coming to an understanding of what a worldview is and why it's important, I believe, is one of the most significant things we can do, because again, it gets to the heart of our foundations. Are we building our lives on the rock, or are we building our lives on sand? Are we building our lives on something that can stand, that can withstand the tests of time, withstand the tests of faith, or are we building our house on something, building our lives on something that will eventually crumble and collapse? And we need to understand the importance of that. So let me ask the question here. First of all, what is it? What are we talking about? What is a worldview? Interesting illustration, I believe, given a story told by James Sire, where he talks about a little boy who comes to his father and said, you know, the teacher showed us a big globe, and she said it was a model of the world, and then she said it was just a thing that was surrounded by space. And how can that be, Dad? What holds up the world? What is it that holds the world up? Why don't we just fall down, you know, is the question there. And the father, thinking, well, this is just, it's a child's question, And so he gives an answer that may satisfy a child. He said, well, it's a camel that holds the world up, son. And the boy went away satisfied at first. He trusted his dad. His dad knows what he's talking about. He goes away. But after a little while, he comes back and says, Dad, I was just wondering, if a camel holds up the world, what holds up the camel? And his father thought he might be in a little trouble now. And so he came back with a quick answer and said, it's a kangaroo, son, that holds up the camel. And the little boy walked away. But he didn't stay away that long. He comes back very quickly and he says, well, Dad, what holds up the kangaroo? And now his dad knew he was really in trouble, because he realized that this is going to keep going. You know, where do you stop? And he thinks the biggest animal he can think of, and he says, well, son, it's an elephant that holds up the kangaroo. And the son doesn't even walk away this time. He says, but Dad, what holds up the elephant? And the dad simply says, son, it's an elephant all the way down. Now, I want you to think about that a minute. That's your worldview. That's your foundation. What is it that goes all the way down? What is it that comes all the way to the foundation, to the point where you can't go back any further? There is nothing else that can hold anything else up. It is the first holder, if you will. It is the very first thing that upholds everything else in your life. What is that worldview? What is that foundation for you? You see, the father is pushed to his logical limits. And out of frustration, he claims that it's this elephant that goes all the way down. It takes up something to hold up the world. Then something's got to hold up what's holding that up. And then something's got to hold that up. And on you can go. At some point, you have to reach that place where, as we used to say, you know, the buck stops here. This is it. There is nothing else that can go down any further than that. He had to commit to some kind of final foundation. Of course, the problem is he's only committing to physical foundations. He's only committing to things that ultimately need something else to hold them up. My question to you then is, what is your first holder? What is your ultimate foundation for everything else that you think and everything else that you do? Everything else must rest on this. You can't go back any further. You can't go back any deeper. There can be nothing greater. Is it rock or is it sand? That's my question. And that's the foundation of your worldview. It's your way of thinking. It's your paradigm for decision making. It's how you understand and see everything else in this world. It's your commitment to that foundation of ultimate reality. As one writer says, a worldview is a set of beliefs about the most important issues in life. Basically, it's your comprehensive conception, your image of everything in this world here. You see, a worldview has a total set of beliefs that are interconnected with one another, a web of ideas and thoughts that make sense out of everything. There's some way that you look at this world and you say, this is the way I have to make sense out of this world. And that's what we're talking about. And people do this either consciously or unconsciously. I would tell you that everyone has one. You might be sitting there going, well, I've never thought about a worldview. I don't really have a worldview. Yes, you do. Everyone has one. You can't escape it. You may not think about it much. You may not have consciously sat down and said, I'm going to think about my worldview. But what I'm trying to get us to do is to do just that. To sit down consciously and think about it. To think it out. To think it through. Because the more that we're aware of our framework in our minds for interpreting everything else, the stronger our faith can be. And the better we'll be able to help both ourselves and others in understanding the nature of the gospel. But not a single person can legitimately say, well, I don't have a worldview, because that really just says, I don't understand what a worldview is. Again, it's your commitment to ultimate reality, to what it is that you believe is the final holder of everything else. Why is that important? Why is that so important to us? If I were to ask you, what is the very first foundation for everything else that you think and do, what would your answer be? I hope your answer would be basically this: in the beginning, God. Isn't that it? In the beginning, God created. Genesis 1 and verse 1 says. That is the foundational understanding to who God is, who we are, and why we ought to be concerned about doing His will. In the beginning was the Word, John 1 and verse 1. That is a fundamental statement of understanding who Jesus is as Lord and why we ought to be concerned about what He was doing in this world. We cannot separate God the Creator from Jesus as Lord from everything else that we do and think. Now, in contrast, and some of the things we'll be doing this week will be contrasting the biblical worldview with atheism. I want you to see this contrast very clearly here in these worldview ideas. For the atheist, naturalism, the idea that nature is all that there is nothing beyond nature, there is no God, there's no spiritual world, there's nothing else. We basically are in a closed system, and it's all just this natural material world. That is a philosophical commitment that the atheist makes. And that God then has no part of any decisions that are going to be made or actions that they may choose. Yet we might recognize here that naturalism, the idea that this world is just a closed system and there's nothing else out there, that is not a scientific finding. There is no science anywhere that has discovered that. It is a philosophical starting point from which they interpret everything else that they see and do. So what I'm getting at is that the decision-making paradigm for the believer is going to be very different from the paradigm that the unbeliever starts with. And this is why, when addressing a variety of issues, we make a mistake by simply focusing on the superficial aspects of a problem rather than dig down a little bit deeper to our worldview commitments. Discussing the rightness or the wrongness of a particular action can fall into that trap, a dispute perhaps over personal preferences, until we understand that there are more foundational issues at stake and more foundational reasons why we take the positions that we do take. The foundation to which we cling, whether we consciously understand it or not, will affect everything else that we do, everything else that we think. And once we get this, other things will begin to fall into place. Things will begin to make more sense. When we're asking, well, why do they say that? Why do they do that? Why do they believe that? How do they reach that conclusion? Their worldview foundation is integral to the conclusions that they reach, as it is with our conclusions. And we really need to understand why that's important. I would say that many disagreements that we find in our culture can be traced beyond the particular disagreements to a worldview clash. We get to the heart of why we disagree. And again, oddly enough, I've run into people who very much dislike talking about worldviews. I mentioned the one who said, well, I don't see what a worldview has to do with morality. It has everything to do with it. Looking at a question and saying, is this right, is this wrong?
you have to go back and ask, well, what makes something right or wrong to begin with? Is it right or wrong simply because I don't like it? Simply because I have a preference against it? Is it right or wrong just because a group of people over here say it's right or wrong? Or a political party over here says it's right or wrong? Is that what makes it right? Is that what makes it wrong? Or is there something deeper to the idea that morality is built into the very nature of those made in the image of God? Is that important? Oh, yes. It's at the heart of who we are. And we'll talk more about those issues this week. Every worldview is going to impact every significant question that we may have. Who are we? Why are we here? How can I know anything? What is my relationship to the world? How do I make moral decisions? Why should I think about, what should I think about others? How should I treat others? What we're getting at is that a worldview gives us our essential rock bottom answers to the most important questions of life. And I just kind of illustrate it this way. And again, I see all this as pretty much interconnected. Every worldview is going to ask the question or answer the question, who is God? Whether you're an atheist, a theist, a Hindu, a Muslim, whatever it is, your worldview is going to answer that question. Who is God? What do I think about God? And what you think about God will impact every other question that you have. What is reality, and what does that mean? What's the ultimate reality here? In other words, is evil real? Do you realize that there are worldviews that deny the reality of evil completely? There's really nothing that's evil. Is that real? What about knowledge? How do we get our knowledge? How do we know anything? Or I might ask the question this way. How do we even have the ability to know anything? Is our ability to know, based on our ability to think and reason, does that come from mindless, purposeless, accidental processes? Or does it come from a creator who made us in his image? Does that make a difference in how we might approach a variety of issues and what we might know or not know? Of course it does. It impacts that. Again, what about morality? How do I know what's right and wrong? How do I go about making moral decisions? Why would I argue that this is right or this is wrong? On what basis, for example, can anybody say that a particular action is immoral? I've had discussions with atheists where they will deny that there's any ultimate good or bad. They deny that there's any ultimate right or wrong, and that they argue essentially that it boils down to our own preferences and what we've decided as a culture and that kind of a thing. And then turn around and say that something is immoral. And I'll challenge them at that point. How can you say that something is immoral? Universally immoral, if you've just denied that there's such a thing as universal morality. There's a problem. That's impacted by their overall worldview. Or humanity. What we think about other people is very much impacted by our worldview. By the end of the week, I want to talk to you about a couple of these issues biblically. We'll ask a question like this. What are human rights? What does that mean? We're big on that in our culture. We want to talk about human rights. But if we have human rights, where do they come from? Do they come from, again, mindless, purposeless, accidental processes that suddenly we've got people in place who want to say, these are rights, we will give you your rights and we'll take them away if we want to? Or are we endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights because we're made in His image? Or let me ask you this question. Why is racism wrong? Why? We're going to answer that question later in the week. Is racism wrong because we've just arbitrarily decided it? Or is it wrong because there's something else built into who human beings are, fundamentally being made in the image of God? How we answer these questions, impacted by the foundations we accept as our worldview. If we think about what it means then to choose a worldview, what I'm suggesting is that as we think about what it means to have these foundations and how that impacts everything else that we do, everything else that we think about, that we can actually make choices about this. You might default to a particular worldview because you've just, maybe that's how you grew up and you thought that and you just haven't really thought it through or something. That's certainly probably a common problem. What I'm suggesting is we back up, we think about it, and we make some choices about how we're going to continue to think about these issues. If a worldview is so foundational, then it stands to reason that we should be careful about how we go about making these choices. How do you go about choosing a worldview? Do you choose it at all? Well, I want to think about what this means as we think about how we can choose and test a worldview. Because I'm challenging us to be more proactive in the process here. Understand what it is. Understand why it's so vital. Understand how you can be actively aware about how your worldview impacts everything that you're doing. And for Christians, this ought to mean that we can be more thoughtful in deciding how we think and act with our thoughts and actions so that they will glorify God. Every thought needs to be brought under captivity to the obedience of Christ, according to 2 Corinthians 5:10. Or even a passage like Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Or Colossians 3 and verse 24, it is the Lord Christ whom you serve. This ought to help us understand a little bit more our purpose and our desire to please the Lord. And what all that means is we make a big mistake when we start separating out the parts of our lives in such a way that we think there's a part of our life that gets insulated from our Christianity. Well, you know, this is my work. And at work, sometimes I have to lie. And at work, sometimes I have to... I mean, I'm a Christian, but when I'm at work... Or, you know, hey, it's just a game. And you know, sometimes those words come out of my mouth and I don't really mean anything by it. Are you thinking through the idea that every single part of your life needs to be in service to the Lord Jesus Christ? There's a lot of students here. And I would often tell my students, when you're writing a paper, you're not writing it for me. You're writing it for the Lord. When you do your work, you're not doing it for me. You're doing it for the Lord. And that means when you're sitting there in your dorm room writing your paper at 2 a.m. when it's due that morning, and you're thinking, how am I going to get this done in time? Oh, somebody wrote an article over here. I can just pull a few paragraphs out of that and use it. And I'm now tempting myself to cheat and plagiarize. I want you to stop and remember, it is the Lord Christ whom you serve. And that will impact every paper you write, every bit of work that you do, every speech you give, everything you do at your job. It will impact everything because that is your worldview. And you don't just to separate those things out. Well, in my family, I can do things differently than I do over here because I'm a Christian. You know, I'm giving my time to the Lord now because I'm coming to church, right? That isn't the way it works. You know, the Lord never asked for part of you. He didn't say, you know, I want you to deny, you know, in Luke 9:23, for example, if anyone will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. Notice he doesn't say there, I want you to deny your finances occasionally. I want you to deny some of your time. I want you to, what he says is, I want you to deny you. Not just part of you. The Lord's not asking for a piece of you. He's asking for you, all of you, everything about you, everything that you are, everything that you think, every action and thought that you take, brought into submission to the authority of Jesus Christ, your King. Why? Because your God reigns. That's the essence of the gospel. Your God reigns. Do we believe that? If that's the worldview we choose, then we need to act like that. We will know that what we choose is not accidental. We'll understand our purpose better. We'll know our destination. Our faith will reflect that understanding. In short, we will own our faith and we will know that it's real. Think about the importance of what that means. Think about what it means to test a worldview. Well, one of the things we need to be able to do is look at a worldview and say, okay, let me at least test it and see if it makes any real sense here. For example, we might think of what some have called the test of reason, which has to do with just the way that we think about things, logic and reason. I want to tell you something. Logic is not an enemy of your faith. The world might want to paint it in that way. Oh, we have reason and you have superstition and that kind of a thing. Logic is not an enemy of your faith. It is a friend. It is something that comes from God. And this should make sense of a God who created us with minds, the ability to think and reason after Him, who Himself is the epitome of all reason. You can read sermons like Acts 17 where Paul applies reason to his message or see how Jesus applies reason and logic even to his dialogues and questions. What this means on a practical level is we want to make sure that our worldview doesn't conflict with itself. That it's not self-contradictory or anything like that. Now, we should expect a worldview to be internally consistent. Because if it contains inherent internal contradictions, there's a major problem. Skepticism, for example, is doomed to self-destruct. Why? Because basically it maintains that nothing can be demonstrated as true. Let's say that somebody says to you, you know, there is no such thing as truth. What's a question you can ask right there? Is that true? Think about it. There's no such thing as truth. Well, is that you just made a truth statement. You've just made a propositional truth statement that is either true or false. If what you're saying is true, then it's false. But if what you're saying is not true, then it's false, which means either way it's false. What that means is it is a self-contradictory statement. It makes absolutely no sense. It's kind of that whole only the Sith speak in absolutes, right? Makes no sense. It's a statement that has absolutely no meaning to it, really. So if somebody's worldview is there is no truth, or if somebody says, we can't know anything, well, how do you know that? Well,
gives you the confidence to know that we can't know any?
You see, these are self-contradictory statements. That makes the worldview inherently and internally inconsistent with itself. Or somebody says to you, don't you push your morals on me.
In other words, their worldview is, you should never push morals on anybody. That's part of their foundation. Okay, my question then is,
are you telling me what to do and what not to do? Is it immoral for me to push my morals on somebody else? When you're doing the very same thing to me by telling me what not to do, it doesn't make any sense. Think about how statements like that, you just turn them back on themselves and see if they make any sense. And you'll find that's a pretty good test of whether or not this type of a worldview is going to make any sense. Test of experience means basically we're looking at something that ought to be relevant to what we know to be true about the world and about ourselves. For example, we know that pain and suffering are real. If our worldview taught us that evil is just an illusion or pain is just an illusion, which again, some do, we would know that we have failed the test of experience because we all have suffered pain. Likewise, we know that we have the capacity to think, to love, to act responsibly, and to know that we're accountable. When a worldview denies those kinds of things or teaches that they have no ultimate importance, they're failing the test of experience. Our moral experience would be another example. We know that we're moral beings. And we need a deeper explanation from just somebody saying, well, that's just the way we are. Everyone makes decisions about right and wrong. Everyone has lines that they won't cross. Everyone thinks that others ought to behave or ought not to behave in a certain way, including the moral relativist. So imagine that philosophy teacher who spends the entire semester telling you that all morals are relative, there is no ultimate right and wrong, but at coming to the final exam says, now you better not cheat or else I'll fail you. Well, why shouldn't I? You just spent the entire semester telling me that cheating would be okay. Does it make sense with our experience? We ought to be suspicious of any worldview that denies what we know to be true about who we are as moral beings accountable to universal principles. And the test of practice goes right along with that. Worldviews are practical. They're tested in real life. The question here again is whether we can live consistently and in harmony with the worldview we profess. Now, some people will say, well, Christians don't live consistently with their profession because sometimes they fail. Sometimes they do wrong. Sometimes they act morally irresponsible. And that is true. Sometimes they do. But those who argue against Christianity like that sometimes fail to take into account that one of the major components of our worldview is that God is a God of grace and forgiveness. None of us here, I hope none of us here, are saying, I am perfect in every way. I have reached the pinnacle of perfection and I never do anything wrong. It's our understanding and our nature and who we are. We recognize, yes, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And yes, I need Jesus because I need forgiveness. And when I fail, just John said in 1 John chapter 2, I write these things so that you may not sin, but if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. He's not making excuses for sin. He's not saying it's okay to sin, but he is saying we recognize that sometimes we do fail and we need forgiveness, and that's part of our profession, what we are professing about our worldview. God is a God of grace and mercy and forgiveness. It's part of who we are. I'm challenging us this week, And there would be a lot more to say about this as we're running out of time. But I'm challenging us this week to think more biblically about all these issues. And so we'll be looking at the next hour at the question, who is God? When we talk about God, what do we mean? What are we saying? How do we understand the God that we profess to serve? And later in the week, then we'll talk about knowledge. How do we know what we know? And what does the Bible have to say about that? And then we'll talk about morality more. And we'll be contrasting these issues again with the atheistic worldview. I want you to see what they say about it, so that we can have a better understanding of this contrast. And by the time we're done, we'll talk about the need for salvation more. I appreciate your time, and I hope that you'll be challenged to think at a deeper level about the worldview that you hold and profess. Thank you.